This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.
The advice that I was given by somebody is the point of a meeting is to get another meeting. And so a lot of times what I realized and through talking to people and being like, what is this? What are we doing? Because you sit down with people that are like execs at a network that you love and you're nervous as shit. And you're just like, I just want them to love me and tell me that I'm validated and give me a bunch of money to make a show. And a lot of times they're kind of just wanting to see, like, they just want to chat and then see what you're about, see what your vibe is. If you're too eager, that's not good. They just want to see if you'd be somebody they'd like to work with.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I think a lot of it's just like, it's almost like a date. Like, is this person going to be somebody I want to see again? And then if you want to see them again, then maybe then you can talk about work.
Hot Breathiverse, we are back. Hello, it is I, your host, comedian Joel Byers. And you know what time it is. Hot Breath. That is right, Hot Brethren and Sistren. Welcome back to Hot Breath Podcast, your weekly guide to comedy mastery. Oh, and this Hot Breathisode number 156. Yeah, 156. We all the way out here now. Last week's episode with Nick Gibbons got so much great feedback. I super much appreciate you guys supporting that. And this week's episode, I got to tell you, this is a guest we've been working to get onto the show for a little while now. Always been a goal of mine to interview this hilarious, hilarious, hilarious comedian. And now we have finally wrangled in the schedules and have locked it in. So just like last week's guest, Nick Gibbons, he is a member of Dad's Garage here in Atlanta, Georgia. This week's guest, not only a member of Dad's Garage, but also the voice of Pam on Archer and many other things. Just look at her IMDb, okay? She's got the resume. I don't need to run it down. We just need to get into the interview because I am so excited. You are spending your valuable time with us here in the Hot Breathiverse. So if you do enjoy it, all I say, hey, just give it a share. Share it with your comedy friends, your family friends, your work friends, your stuffed animal friends. Sorry. I tried to improvise there, but I used the power of threes, but I'm not really happy with the stuffed animals friends punchline. But anyway, the lady I'm interviewing today, a master improviser, also in voiceover. This is a good, great, spectacular interview all about not only just how you could break into the voiceover world, but also just creating your own content and then getting it in front of the right people and just the hustle behind comedy. It, whether you're in improv or you're in stand-up or whatever it is, there's so many parallels, which is why I like interviewing people beyond just stand-up, because we can draw in so many parallels between the worlds and really learn from each other and look at comedy from a new angle and a new perspective so you can actually see new potential in your own comedy. So this is definitely an interview geared up for that. So we've been releasing a lot of content on these, been posting 3 interviews a week, or hot breath episodes, if you will. Wednesdays, I do the Tight 5 podcast, where it's a shorter, condensed episode where I just interview comics out in the field and on the grind. And then others, the Fridays have been, sometimes I did a keynote speech at Podcast Atlanta, or this past weekend I posted a phone conversation I had with LeVar Walker. So it's just a little bit of everything, but it's all geared around comedy mastery. That is my passion, and thank you for supporting it in these early stages still. Yeah, 156, but it's still early. But you know what? This outro is getting a little late. Well, strike that. This intro is getting a little late, so let's get into the interview. Hot Breath Podcast, if you enjoy it, subscribe to keep up with all the other content. We have merch as well, just dropped the Hot Breath Podcast store just in time for the holidays. It'll be linked in the show notes. You can get your own Hot Breath swag, whether it's a sweatshirt, hoodie, t-shirt, sticker, socks even. It'll all be in the show notes. But I said all that to say, there's only one thing left to do. And that is inhale a hot breath with Amber.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah.
We're here. What's up, Hot Breathiverse? I'm Joel Byers, you know, the guy that hosts this every single week. Thanks for tuning in. I love you so much. Today's guest, OMG. Just reveal her. Just show her. Just show her. Let them know. The one and only. Oh, my hand made it in there too. I love this is TV magic right here. My this is going to be the whole interview, just my hand doing this at you and then you just answering my hand.
Great.
So I know you're an improviser, so it'll be fine.
So it'll be fine, yeah.
You can totally, you're doing a good job of yes-anding so far.
Thanks.
So I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
So we haven't even met before, so this is really cool.
Yeah.
It's been a long time coming.
It has been. I've been waiting to meet you for a very long time, Joel.
I can tell.
Yeah.
Well, it has finally happened.
Yep.
On the cusp of season 10.
Yes.
Of Archer.
Yeah.
Which is, you guys are on Seinfeld status now. You're beating Seinfeld. They had 9 seasons.
Oh, God. I thought for whatever reason they went on for like 30 seasons.
It was just 9.
Wow. And what an impact they made on the world.
And what an impact Archer is making.
Yeah. Great. That's great. I mean, I didn't think I was at Seinfeld status. I'm surely not making as much money as them. Because they were making like $1 million an episode towards the end. And that was 100 years ago when $1 million was a lot more money.
Well, how has it changed from you got Archer without even auditioning?
Right.
Because you were working with the people that created Archer, right?
That's right. Yeah, I'd worked with them. They had done 2 shows, maybe more, but 2 that I know of for Adult Swim. Mm-hmm. And I was working on Frisky Dingo. And they were just like, hey, do you want to do this? And I was like, yeah. But I didn't know what FX was back then. Like, the only thing that had really happened that was like buzzy about FX then was Always Sunny.
Right.
So I didn't even know that. I had never really heard of that network. And so I didn't know it was going to, I just thought it was going to be another job where they paid me under the table and I showed up and they called me 10 minutes before and I just went and did a job. It was just like a gig, you know what I mean? And then it became a really big show.
So you would get paid like cash for your Frisky Dingo?
Back in the day, like I was just I was just an improviser that was just looking for money. And I wasn't union. And I think that part of the reason why they used me so often is because they could just call me and I'd show up and they didn't have to do any paperwork. And they could just like give me a check and I'd take it to the check cashing place because I had like terrible credit. I didn't even have a bank account.
What?
And I'd like cash my check and then go buy a big bottle of wine.
Oh, that's why you had bad credit.
Yeah.
You spent your money on wine.
Because the check cashing place is usually right next door to a liquor store.
Perfect.
Just, you know how it should be.
At least you said bottle and not box. A box of wine is a whole other level of sadness.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, how has it changed from year 1 on Archer to now year 10 or season 10? Maybe from the business side.
Lot of things have changed, but a lot of things have stayed the same. Like when we were making season 1, it hadn't aired yet, so we didn't know if people were going to like it, if they were going to hate it. Because it was kind of like the first big push past like Family Guy and those shows. It was like the next try at an adult animated show, right? And so we just didn't know what people were going to think about it. And I don't think we realized until like we were making season 2 that it was going to be people liked it, critics liked it. As far as like the nuts and bolts of what we do, like the studio, we're at a different studio now, but it's all pretty much the same. Like nothing's fancy. There's still like it's a little bit nicer now because the studio we go to has like tea for us. But that's really it. It's all just kind of the same. Everybody drives cars that are a little bit nicer that work for Floyd County. You know, people are just like, oh, okay, well, this is going to be going on for a while, maybe. Like some people have like bought houses. A few people, like when it first started, the animation team was pretty small.
Uh-huh.
And now there's like, I think over 200 people that work there.
200?
And there's like a whole 3D department. There's so many people that work there. And like people have gotten married. So I've seen like young, like scrappy art school kids that are working on a TV show now that are like married and have kids and are like still working there. It's pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
How's it changed for you though?
I bought a house. So that was a big deal.
Archer bought a house?
Yeah, Archer bought a house. It's funny. So I was at Comic-Con in San Diego maybe 3 years ago, and FX was doing You know, they would do something for American Horror Story, which is like a, you could walk through like a haunted house kind of thing. And then there was like a little archer area, and ours was like a sculpture garden. So you could walk through and like see like a statue of different characters. Mm-hmm. So there was this Pam bust that was really awesome looking that an artist made for them. And at the end, one of the guys at FX was like, "Do you want this?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think so. I mean, it'll be kind of weird, but might as well have it. I can put it in my yard or something." So he had it mailed to me. And it's when we bought our house, it's sitting on like a big bookshelf at the very top of the bookshelf. And it kind of looks down on our living room. And my husband and I are like, well, Pam Poovey bought this house.
Right. Yeah.
Now she's in a place of honor in the living room.
The house that Pam built.
Yeah. 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 But, you know, I still live in Atlanta. I still go and do shows at Dad's Garage every weekend that I'm in town. So, like, in a lot of ways, my life is totally the same. But then, you know, I don't have to worry about money as much as I used to have to worry about money. Uh-huh. And so there are things like that. But I would like to think that 10 years, if it passed doing Archer or if it passed doing anything, I still would have been a little bit more successful or grown up or, you know what I mean? So I think some of that's just the passing of time too.
What do you think on the business side a little bit? It started out so organic, you getting this show, mm-hmm. but I know in the business side, it's like you can be with friends, but business can maybe sometimes interfere depending on the relationship. So like mm-hmm. 10 seasons and actually like, oh, now I could afford a house from this.
Right.
Was it all more organic or was this something that had to be like negotiated and just kind of worked
out?
Oh,
as far as like pay, what I was getting paid and stuff?
Yeah, like the behind the scenes of it, it just, that's a part a lot of comedians that listen to this maybe not have much experience with and how to actually navigate those waters.
Yeah, so it was kind of a little bit of both. So the first big thing that happened was, so a lot of people that listen to this in Georgia might know that Georgia is a right to work state. Mm. And then there's lots of other states that aren't right to work states. So what that means for people that are actors is that you can work here and not be in the union. And so actually part of the reason why, and I don't know a ton about this, but a lot of stuff shoots in Georgia because they can get cheaper talent because they don't have to pay union rates.
Oh. So
one of the first big things that happened is that I had to join the union. And so sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's a bad thing. Before I had Archer, to join the union wasn't a good thing because it eliminates the amount of work I could do because then I couldn't do non-union jobs. And so when I was at that level in my career, I needed to do non-union jobs in order to make enough money to survive. So it was a hard thing to decide to join the union. But then when I had to, they're like, we can't be on the show unless you join the union. And I was like, okay, great. So I joined the union and then I got health insurance and there's benefits that come along with it, but you have to pay union dues. And so I didn't know a lot about that. So that was kind of the first big thing that happened. And then, you know, I think as far as like payment goes, when they started the show, there was a lot of big celebrities on the show. There's still big celebrities today. And I think that was part of, you know, I think every show tries to do that to get viewers. And so I'm pretty sure that those guys were making a ton more money than I was. And like totally for good reason, because I was just like a scrappy improviser that was never trained on how to do voice work and that just lucked into this job.
No audition. Magic.
They just gave it to me.
It's awesome.
And then as seasons went on, I also didn't have an agent. So there was nobody, you know, if I'd gotten this job through an audition and an agent, 10% of my money would be going to an agent, but I didn't have an agent. So I got that job on my own. So there was nobody taking money off the top, which was pretty rad.
Yeah.
And the other thing that was weird that I don't think is very common is that I'm good friends with the creator and the producer. And so they looked out for me. And I don't think there's a lot of actors that'll be like, oh yeah, the producer's looking out for me and making sure I make enough money. Because most of the time the producer's trying to make sure that they're saving money. So I was really lucky that he's like a big brother to me. So I was really lucky that he took care of me and he's like, hey, you should probably get a manager or you should probably get an agent. And so as time went by, I got an agent, I got a manager. And so those people helped me when, like, I think it wasn't until season 5 that we renegotiated all of our contracts. And that's when everything, like, thank God I had somebody to do that for me because I wouldn't have been able to do it. And in the beginning, they were just paying me what they would pay me kind of thing, mm-hmm. you know? And so there's still so much that I don't completely understand, but I'm just like residuals. I'm like, I have literally no idea how that works. It's like magic. Like just like checks come into my mailbox and I'm just like, I have no idea when they come, why they come, how many come. I don't know. I don't understand any of it.
What's the smallest one?
Lots of times you'll get like, I think the smallest one's usually like $16.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, you know, I'll get like a stack of checks and it's like, ooh, if these are all like $100 checks, that's a ton of fucking money. Or if these are all like $16 checks, it's like just a I have to open a lot of envelopes for like $100.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So, but it's still so cool. Well, I'm never going to know how that works.
Yeah. I've heard some that'll be like, it'll be like 7 cents. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Whatever works.
And I'm sure like at the, because I believe that like if a show airs the first time, let's say you make $100 on that. And then the next time it airs, you make 80. And the next time it airs. So I think it just goes down incrementally every time it airs.
Uh-huh.
So in 20 years, I'll probably be getting those 7 cent checks. Yeah.
Do you think you'll ever be tired of doing Pam impressions?
No, I love it.
Oh,
and
okay.
I also, because I never expected this to ever be a thing. And I'm always surprised that people know the show and they know who I am and they know the character, that I'm just delighted by the whole thing. It, like for years, people would be like, what are you doing? And I'd say, oh, I'm on a show called Archer. And people are like, you don't have to say I'm on a show called Archer. People know what that is. And so that still is like surprising to me.
That's why I didn't know in interviews and researching you, mm-hmm. it seemed like everyone would be like, okay, say this in Pam's voice.
Yeah.
And then, oh, look at that. I got all excited and knocked the microphone out of my face. Say this in Pam's voice.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder if that ever gets annoying.
Not really.
Not.
And I think too, most of the people on Archer aren't doing a character voice. They're just using their own voice,
yeah.
except for like, you know, seasons where like Cyril is German or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But Pam kind of always was a bit of a character voice because it's my voice pretty much, but just a little bit different. So it really is just me saying words.
It's like you impersonating your mom, right?
Yeah. 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 Because the first time I saw Pam's head was kind of when I thought about what the character might sound like, but they also don't like using character voices, the guys that make the show, because it's too inconsistent because you never know. But like once you've been doing it for 10 years, you can do that. Like the guys on Simpsons can do those voices in their sleep.
Right.
But in the beginning, it can be a little inconsistent and to make sure that you get the exact same character
uh-huh.
sound.
Yeah, yeah.
So they don't like doing it. So I think that they weren't quite sure about me doing it. But yeah, the first time I saw Pam's head, I was like, oh, she's going to sound like what my mom sounds like. And so it was an impersonation of my mom that first was Pam's voice.
Yeah. How do you consistently hit that same note over and over and over?
In the beginning, now it's kind of easy because I'm just used to doing it, but.
Oh, that's Fontis water. How delicious.
Fontis.
Ooh. Ooh, fancy.
Very nice. Very refreshing. In the beginning, and this is a trick I learned in improv. I'm not great at doing, like accents. I can do character voices, but accents are a completely different thing for me and I'm bad at it. There's so many people that are good at it. I'm like, I'll let them do it. But one of the things I learned to do is if I say was playing a character in a show and it was a harder voice for me to do, there was always a word that would help me click back into what that character sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Like I did this this character for a soap opera that we did at Dad's Garage. So every week I would play the same character that was Hispanic. And so the word that I would use to help me click back into her voice was passion. And so I was like, passion would help me get her voice right. And with Pam, it's really? Really? And so that helps me click back into what she sounds like. So if it's been like, if we've been on a break in between seasons, so sometimes it will have been like 3 or 4 months since I've recorded.
Yeah.
And so I'll just kind of have to go through a few things or even read some of my script out loud and then I'm ready to go.
Yeah, you are a character, like, mosaic. You really have so many characters within you.
Mm-hmm.
Where do they come from, and then how do you tap into them or even discover them?
Yeah, I think where they come from, I'm not exactly sure. But
uh-huh.
I think, like, being trained in improv, when you start a scene, you have just a few things from the audience, right? You maybe have a word from the audience. You maybe have something that your scene partner's done. You maybe have a little bit of a setting for the scene. So you just got to make a quick, bold choice about who's going to be fun to watch in this setting.
Mm.
And so I think that in the early years, there's a few I'd try out and then be like, oh, that was really fun. Or the audience responded to that. And then I'd kind of put it away and be like, okay, so that's in my bag of characters. And then over the years, I just kind of added to that. And then there's, of course, favorites. And then I still, because I've done that for so long, I have a lot of characters that I can go to, which makes me lazy. So I have to make sure that I'm like trying and I'll do a show and be like, okay, I'm going to play some new characters this show instead of of just relying on all the characters that I'm used to. Uh-huh. So, and hopefully, like, usually I know the character well enough that I can click into it, but if it's in a different situation or a different setting, then it'll change the character. So then there's also different versions of characters, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, I love, one of my favorite characters to play on stage is, like, crusty old men characters. And so that can be, like, an old prospector, or it can be like a moonshiner, or it could be like a preacher, uh-huh, or it might be a ghost. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's just like I start with the voice first and then put them into a situation that changes their kind of backstory. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. Because I'm a stand-up comedian, mm-hmm, but I do have training in improv and like sketch writing. And the thing with stand-up is it's almost... physicality is one way to draw humor, and then your voice can be another.
Yeah.
So how do you kind of balance those two languages?
I do better, and I think there's people that are more body people and more voice people, and I think that I'm more of a voice person, but I also like the way a character walks, or the way, and you have so much less in stand-up. Stand-up totally scares the shit out of me.
Have you ever done it?
No. Because you're up there all by yourself and you have no support. Oh my God, I can't imagine. Because if you bomb an improv, there's people that can come on stage and save you, but there's not that in stand-up. I can't imagine doing it.
Oh, it's
terrifying.
Best.
Yeah.
It's like the highs are higher, but the lows are lower because it is all you.
Yeah.
But what's your worst improv bomb?
Oh my God, there's been so many, I'm sure.
Yes.
I'm trying to think of a really great bomb in improv. Because I think lots of times, like, it happens so often that I like don't have any. Because you have to, and you know this, that like if you're gonna be funny, you have to take risks, right?
Yeah.
And you just don't know if something's gonna work for an audience. You might think it's hilarious when you're writing your joke, but then you try it in front of an audience and people are like, no. Or that audience might hate it, but the next audience next week might love it. And so you have to take risks constantly, which means that you're gonna be failing regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's been plenty of times where I'm like, wind up, like, here we go, guys. This is gonna be hilarious. And then you say it and it's just like crickets. And you're like, well, okay.
Yeah.
All right. But I think too, one of the things that helps me out of those bomb situations is being self-deprecating and being like, hey, we're in this together. Like, that sucked. We all know it. Let's get past it.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So I think charm goes a long way in helping you get past those giant bomb situations.
In stand-up, you know, it seems like it's one of the only art forms where they're like, I'll just throw them in the corner of a bar. Like, no one would ever put like a Van Gogh painting in the corner of a bar.
Right.
But they're like, ah, whatever. Like,
yeah.
That's part of the grind with stand-up.
Yeah.
Is there like a similar like rise in improv where you are doing like grungy grit work?
Yeah. I mean, I think too that they call it bar prov. It's the same thing where you're
bar
just like,
prov.
You're
okay.
In a bar, or the worst, here's the worst. Because a lot of times we'll get hired, right? So people like call Dad's Garage and they're like, we're having a Christmas party for our office. Uh-huh. And we think it'd be hilarious if we had improvisers come and do a show. And so then you go do a show and you're, because we have to move around. We can't stand hold a mic. We have to like be able to move around and act out a scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they put us like in the corner of the room, like behind the carving station for for prime rib. And so you're like fighting with trying to get people's attention. And they're at an office party. They don't give a shit what you're saying. They just want to talk to their friends. The last thing they want, they're like, oh God. So they're embarrassed that they aren't listening to you. And it's just like, it's an absolute nightmare. There's been so many. There was one particularly really bad performance. And so you learn how to get out of really bad situations because people think that, oh, this is going to be great. And you're like, no, I know that this is not going to be great. And let me tell you, you should be doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
So we did this thing that was like it was like an art auction, but there was like some designers that were showing some of their fashion. So the room was set up with like a long runway, okay? And then just people milling around everywhere. So it's like there's no stage. Where do you turn your back? Like, where do you stand on a runway to do a comedy show? And so we didn't have mics, and there's like 300 people all talking. And now we have to do like a stupid word at a time story for a bunch of people that don't give a shit what we're saying. It was just, you're just sweating. You're just like, I just got to get through this. Like, just 15 more minutes and I can get off this stage. There's a lot of those.
How do you overcome that? Or how do you perform regardless of the situation?
Like in that one in particular, and there's been at least a handful of those that are that bad, you just do it because you're getting paid. So you know, like,
right,
I'm making $200 to do this hour-long show, so I got to deliver. But then nobody that's there could be mad at us us for the situation they put us in. Mm-hmm. So if nobody's listening to us, we don't, there's nothing we can do about it. So we just try to do the best show we can and keep commenting on the fact that no one's listening to us and nobody cares and that we're pieces of shit that don't matter. You know, those kinds of things.
How long ago was like, are these
That
shows?
Was probably 10 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. But we are constantly put in that kind of situation. But now, luckily, we've been around long enough and we've got people that like are our corporate people that book these gigs and they know what to tell people. They get a lot of information and they're like, this can work, this can't work. We have mm-hmm. to be mic'd, like stuff like that.
Yeah, it's amazing how far credibility will go.
I know.
You're not just some improv theater. You're dad's garage.
Yeah.
So I'm sure the clientele
totally.
Will reflect that.
And that, you know, 10 years ago, now we've been open for almost 25 years, but 10 years ago.
Oh, that's incredible. I didn't realize it'd been that
long. Isn't
that crazy? Yeah.
And so, you know, people didn't know us 10 years ago as much as they do today, and it'll be different 5 years from now, you know. So it's, yeah.
What a bizarre. It's so funny, the improv and stand-up world. There's so many overlaps, and I think we can learn so much from each other. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, it's like Bloods and Crips sometimes.
I know.
I wonder, do you have a theory on why
I
that
think
is?
I actually went to a festival in
Bloods and Crips, maybe a little bit hyperbole too. I don't want to equate the two there.
Right,
just a bunch
right.
of goofballs, and I'm like gangsters. No. Anyway,
I went to a festival in New Orleans, and it was a comedy festival because we do a lot of. Improv festivals everywhere. And so we travel to, like, my husband and I were in Amsterdam this year, and like we went and did cool. shows there. And so they're all over the country, they're all over Canada. And so you go to these festivals and you meet people and you meet other improvisers and you make friends. So we do a lot of those. But this one in particular was different because it was stand up and improv. And it's like, oh boy, exactly what you said. Like, it's like oil and water. Like, what? Because we're like, we're not going to like the stand-ups, and we know the stand-ups aren't going to like us. Like, we'll like watching them, but we're not going to want to hang out together, right?
Yeah.
And I think what the big difference is that we're a team sport, and so we're very, like, we need each other. So it's like the kids that go to like theater camp, right? Like we're playing big dumb games, we're loud, we are like more smiley and friendly and just like... It's like we're going to sing Kumbaya. And
right.
then the stand-ups are a little more surly. They're by themselves. They usually have like depression problems. You know, that's the typical like what people think of them. And so I think it's because it's more of a solitary game, I think. And so they don't want to be around a bunch of dummies that are like doing a one voice, you know, at the bar. They're just like, you guys suck. You know what I mean? Which I totally understand. So I think that's the big difference.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just personality, I guess.
Yeah.
Or preference.
Yeah, totally.
I like them all. Though.
Yeah.
I like funny people
totally.
In general.
And I think just like anything, that's just, you know, a stereotype and there's people across the spectrum. But
right.
yeah.
But you did pick comedy as the perfect, because your background, you were psychologists that worked with like troubled kids, right?
Yeah.
So
you really
you
did your work.
Perfect,
well done.
Oh, hey, you're Amber Nash, okay?
Thanks.
You're Amber Nash. You're worth it.
So yeah, that being my background was definitely helpful because I, you know, actors are difficult and comedians are difficult. And so having a way to deal with people, psychologically
right.
is helpful. But you know, it's been so long now, it's like I don't even remember what I studied 20 years ago in college. I still like get like Psychology Today magazine just to keep up on what's going on in psychology. But mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not as close to my heart as it used to be just because it's been so long.
But even looking at sorry, this screen was throwing me off.
That's
We're
okay.
in a new studio.
Oh yeah.
And my ADD is like, what is
what's
that?
Happening?
What is that movement? Sorry, I'm still a troubled kid in my soul.
Totally.
So in moving forward,
yeah.
let's give the listeners a little more tactical advice here and getting into the voiceover world. Because
mm-hmm.
in getting into entertainment, you start to see how fragmented it can be and how many different opportunities there can be just beyond. Are you on me or her on that? I was just making sure. We're working out the kinks here.
No problem.
But I can see the screen. I'm like, but she's just trying to look interested, but I'm the one that's interesting right now. But you're a good actor.
Thank you.
So there are so many different ways to make a living mm-hmm. in entertainment. Beyond
yeah.
like you're a stand-up comedian, but you can be a host, you can do acting, even voiceovers mm-hmm. another cool avenue.
Mm-hmm.
How or what kind of advice do you have for maybe people that maybe want to break into that more?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's so tough. I mean, the thing is like, There's more opportunity now because there's so many different platforms now than there were 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot more opportunity, or seemingly there's a lot more opportunity, but there's a lot more people because now anybody can be anything, and you can be a YouTube star, and you can be a 5-year-old kid that's like can play the guitar, or you know what I mean? Like anybody can do anything. So there's also a lot more competition. Like, for example, doing voice auditions, I can just record it from my closet and send it in my pajamas any time of day. And so can anybody else in the world, right? So instead of getting 200 submissions, they're getting 900 submissions for the same role. That's two lines. You know what I mean? So there's a lot more competition, I think, because it's easier. Same with like on-camera auditions. You can, I can do an on-camera audition from my house or my friend's house and send it in from anywhere in the world to an agency in LA.
Right.
So there's just a, there's a lot going on. I think that there's two ways to look at it. I think that if you focus on one thing, you can get really good at that one thing. But I also feel like you kind of have to be able to do a lot of different things. Like Aisha, who's on Archer, I look at her and I think like she does everything. Like she's a host, she's a stand-up, she's a nerd. So she knows like everything about nerd culture and can like host a panel. She's an actor, she's a director. And like, I think that's what has been the key to her success. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, somebody like Chris Parnell is like, Chris Parnell is an actor, period. That's what he does. And he's hilarious at it, you know? And so I think it's being versatile, but also knowing that you might have to wear more than one hat, you know? Like for me in the beginning, I did a lot of work for free just to get experience because I didn't go to school for this. Like I didn't train. Oh, yeah. I wasn't trained to do any of this.
And so, like radio ads, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so knowing that I don't know everything, and knowing that there's lots of people out there that are as good and better than I am, then it keeps you humble. Like, because when I first got Archer, I was like, oh, here we go. I can just sit back and the phone's going to be ringing off the hook. And that is not what happened. And I still have to audition for voice work as much as anybody. And I still don't book. So it's like, I'm on a really successful TV show and I still can't book voice acting jobs. So I'm just like every other actor. So it's a grind, and you have to be willing to do it and be willing. You have to love it enough that you can get told no every day, that you're not good enough, and you still want to get up and do it the next day. That's the hardest part of the job, I think.
Yeah, that's why it's got to be your passion.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. And I think self-awareness would play into that, too. It was like, okay, what are my strengths? But also, what do I enjoy doing?
Right.
What would I do regardless of whether or not I got paid?
Mm-hmm.
Because when those lows do happen, it's worth it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and I think you change over time, too. Like, there's things that I'm interested in doing now that 5 years ago, I'm like, I would never want to do that. Like, I would totally be into hosting something now. And 5 years ago, I would have been like, I wouldn't be a good host. That's not something that I want to do. You know what I mean? So I think you can change too, and you can have different interests depending on kind of how you develop as an artist.
Yeah. Has that come with just confidence?
I think so. And also, like, I got to figure out, I mean, Archer's not going to keep going forever. Like, right. I got to figure out what kind of job I can get.
Right.
And so maybe that is being a host. Maybe that is doing, we started making our own stuff too, because it's like, I can sit around and wait for somebody to give me the perfect role. Like I got lucky on Archer and I got this amazing thing. Mm-hmm. Or I can make the perfect role for myself and then try to sell it as a creator, you know? So like through Dad's Garage, luckily, we started kind of making our own content, and we did a web series, we did a short film. And so it's like, what can we do that's making me really jazzed because I get to go work on this super awesome project, even though I'm paying for it. Mm-hmm. At least I'm building my toolbox, you know, by doing stuff that I want to do. And then maybe somebody will pay me for that show, and then it gets to be on a network. You know what I mean?
Was that the goal with Heart of America?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And now Heart of America is kind of more like a spec for us, like, because we didn't sell it, but we can be like, hey, look at what we can do for really cheap. That looks really awesome. And this is all the talent that you don't see, that are people in Atlanta that you might not know about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, and you played like 3 characters in that show, right?
Yeah.
So now you use it almost as like a resume.
Yeah, yeah.
But even in shopping that around, because a lot of us are creating content, especially original content, and it's like, okay, how do we bridge the gap between, okay, we're the creator, but then how do we get it in front of the audience? What was that whole hustle?
So with our web series, which was the first kind of big project we did, we were just like, okay, we're going to make this, we're going to release it so that we get a bunch of views, and then we're going to try to like get some traction.
Uh-huh.
And then be like, because that's kind of one avenue. I'm still learning all this stuff, so I'm by no means an expert.
Yeah.
But then we were like, okay, so it has so many views, so then we might be able to get a meeting with this guy. And then there's the whole meeting, like the whole culture of like, getting meetings and all this like weird stuff where you don't talk about anything and then you leave and you're like, what happened? It's very weird.
Interesting.
But yeah, just trying to get eyes on your stuff and then be like, if it gets some buzz, like a good example is Girls, right? So she made Tiny Furniture, mm-hmm. which was the film, and they made it themselves. Lena Dunham is who I'm talking about.
Lena Dunham, yes.
She made it herself, and then they did pretty well on the festival circuit, and then they got a show deal from HBO based on that. And so that's one way. It's just like, do your own stuff and see if you can get some attention or somebody looking at your stuff.
Yeah.
So, and then after that, we did a short film, and then we're kind of doing like the film circuit, because then you go to festivals, and then you can win awards for your stuff. And so we're still trying to figure it out. Like tomorrow, we have a meeting with a network to talk about a travel show that we made. And so we might be kind of diversifying too much, because we're like, we could do anything. We can do a travel show. We can do movies. You know what I mean? But that's just kind of who we are and what we're excited about. So we're doing whatever project excites us.
Yeah, but I think that's important too, mm-hmm. though, is people can sense when there's an authenticity right. and like an inspiration behind whatever you're creating,
mm-hmm.
and you're not just like, well, we tried this one way, let's try to tweak it a little bit and then try it again. You kind of get in a rut.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's something to that fresh energy in a project yeah. that can help sell it too.
Totally. Yeah, and being improvisers, like we're pretty like cool with just letting stuff be like, oh yeah, that's dead, forget about it
because right.
that's how improv is. You just never yeah. see it again, you know.
Yeah,
so we have to be a little disciplined in like putting the work in, because we've never done that before, you know.
Yeah, I find in meetings that we're talking about all these like generic meetings or whatever, yeah. I've found in my experience that if the person is just in there name dropping a lot mm-hmm. and like, oh, we're connected to this and that person or whatever, mm-hmm. then those are the ones that are never
yeah.
the ones that pan out. Have you found similar experience?
Yeah. And one of the things too, I just didn't know exactly, and I still don't know exactly how it all works. And but the advice that I was given by somebody is the point of a meeting is to get another meeting. And so a lot of times what I realized and through talking to people and being like, what is this? What are we doing? Because you sit down with people that are like execs at a network that you love, and you're nervous as shit. And you're just like, I just want them to love me and tell me that I'm validated and give me a bunch of money to make a show. And a lot of times they're kind of just wanting to see, like, they just want to chat and then see what you're about, see what your vibe is. If you're too eager, that's not good. They just want to see if you'd be somebody they'd like to work with.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I think a lot of it's just like, it's almost like a date. Like, is this person going to be somebody I want to see again? And then if you want to see them again, then maybe then you can talk about work. And so you just don't know. And then some meetings are a little bit more cut and dry, where it's like you get in there, you talk about your project, you leave. And so you kind of need to do a little bit of recon to see like, okay, so what kind of meeting does this person like to have?
Uh-huh.
You know? And I'm always, my husband, Kevin, who's the artistic director at Dad's, he is so good at it. Like, he was born to do this. And I'm just like, I hate talking about myself. I get like sweaty when people ask me questions, and I'm just like, I don't know. Am I good enough? You know? And so it's really hard for me, because you're just basically trying to make, you want people to like you.
Right.
You know?
You probably have experience with that, with like doing upfronts
mm-hmm.
for television too, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people may not know about that side of the game.
Right.
What are upfronts, and what is that experience like?
So FX does upfronts in different ways than other networks does.
Okay.
So I've only experienced the FX upfronts. And basically, the way that I understand it is that we always have ours in March. They're usually a little bit later for other networks, like especially like major networks. They're usually like in May. And so upfronts are the network basically having a big, giant, expensive party to make the advertisers happy. And then everybody that works on all of their shows have to come out and like, you know, parade around and be nice to these advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
And then also that's when you usually find out if your show's been picked up for another season. And so if you don't get invited to the upfronts, then your show probably is getting canceled. And so our show is always kind of aired right after upfronts. And so we've been lucky that we always find out that our show has been renewed before upfronts happen. But sometimes that's not always the case. So there's just a lot that happens. Like, one of the things that happened at upfronts, because we have to go, ours are always at this bowling alley in New York. And
oh,
so,
fancy.
Yeah. So it's like they have a bunch of food out. And like the first year we all got like bowling shirts that had our show name on the back. So that was pretty cool. They stopped doing that because nobody liked it except for me. I was like, I want a new bowling shirt. And then there's like big celebrities like, who's the guy, the winning guy that got in so much trouble, the comedian?
Winning.
You know. 2.5
Charlie
men.
Sheen?
Charlie Sheen, yeah.
Yeah.
So like Charlie Sheen was coming to the party, and there's
Whoa.
All these actors there, but you know, he was like the hot thing because he's insane. And everybody's like, what's he going to do next? And so like when Charlie Sheen showed up, like everybody like scattered and there's like all these people like surrounding Charlie Sheen. And it's just like, what kind of world is this that we live in? Like, it's just bizarre.
Yeah.
But, you know, they trot everybody out for all the advertisers to see. And these are all just people that work at an advertising agency and they have their office jobs and they get to go do this fun thing, you know? So it's weird, but it's fun. And I always get free food and free booze and I get to stay in a nice hotel and they fly me there. So it's like, you know, can't complain.
Yeah, but yeah. You're almost like parading around a little bit.
And but see, the fun thing is nobody gives a shit. Because they're like, who is this person? Does she work for this advertising agency? And I've just never talked to her. But the big celebrities, I feel like one of those guys. Because I'm like, is that Lawrence Fishburne? Like, who are all these celebrities?
Right.
So it's, you know, it's fun.
I bet you have some people that'll fan out on you, too.
If though. They know who I am. That's kind of the good thing about it. Because lots of times people just don't know who I am. Now more than before, because I've just done a lot of stuff like this. Or people see my face doing interviews or panels or whatever. But, you know, sometimes. But it doesn't happen that often.
Yeah, I bet like you go to the cons,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I bet people like dressed up like you and
oh,
things
yeah,
like that.
Oh, yeah. That's really fun. That's one of my favorite things. And also the tattoos. Like people having Pam tattoos.
Whoa.
When I was in Edmonton, there was a woman that showed me her tattoo, and it was like a full thigh piece, like gigantic Pam. And I was just like, holy shit, that is intense. I don't know what to say. It's
crazy.
Does
it make you feel weird?
Not really. If it was my head, I'd be like, oh my God, what are you doing with your life? But because it's a different character, I'm like, oh, it's okay. I have enough distance from her because she doesn't look like me. Like, we don't have the same face. You know
okay.
what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's true.
Like, if it was somebody that got like, if I was like on, you know, a cop show and played like a cop and somebody got a tattoo of that character that was actually my face, that'd be really weird.
Yeah, I guess is different. It's animation.
Yeah.
It's like two different dimensions where at the end of the day, it's like you just standing in a booth.
Yeah.
How crazy will you get in that booth? Are you in there like you are on stage, like really?
You know, one of the first good pieces of advice that I got about voice work is... I was doing radio stuff. That's how I got started. And Mike Schatz, who is an improviser at Dad's, and he works at an ad agency. He gave me a few of my first jobs, and I was like standing behind the microphone, and I had my script on like a music stand, and I was like, I'm like reading the lines, and he's like, what are you doing? He's like, move around in there. Like, people can hear when you've got a smile on your face. They can hear when you're active. They can hear your breath changes when you're moving, you know, all that stuff. And because I was so worried about, because it picks up everything because it's really good, you know, equipment in there. So I was worried about like hitting something or making a noise. And he's like, well, we'll just do it again. Like, we're going to get such a better read if you're doing what you would do on stage or on camera when you're in the booth. And so that was great advice that I got really early on, luckily. And so when I'm doing stuff for Archer, like, especially if it's like, because, you know, since it's like such a high action show, there's lots of scenes that there's a ton of activity going on. So if I'm like running or jumping or, you know, pulling a car, which Pam's done before. So there's lots of exertion noises. And so there's all kinds of shit. Like, I come out of there, I'm sweaty. I usually have to eat food sometimes. So I have to have food in my mouth. Like, there's a lot that happens in those recording sessions. And it's fun. It makes it more exciting, you know?
Yeah, I did see that there's like a YouTube thing of like you and them like telling you you're trying to act like you have food in your mouth.
Yeah.
Like, no, you got to have food in there. And then it's like you with food stuffed
totally.
In your mouth.
And I've used like there's been times that like I had to put like Kleenex in my mouth because we didn't have any food or like, you know, just I've had lots of junk in my mouth. Yeah.
Because that's the side people don't see. Mm-hmm. So even if they are submitting a voiceover audition, it is you're acting as if there is a camera
Absolutely.
There.
And you've got to use everything that your whole body does and distill it down to what's coming out of your mouth. And so your whole body should be doing all the things that they would be doing when you're acting any other way. I really think that it's important to move around. I think that's one of the most important things.
You make it sound so easy that you distill it. All this physicality you distill out of your mouth. I'm like, what?
I don't know. I'm just talking shit.
No, it makes sense, though. But
it's
you made it sound easy. But
right.
It's like, how do you do all these things but then make it sound like all these things?
And the other thing, too, that is, I don't think I quite realized how important it is that, like, if I'm doing an audition at my house, and so I'm reading some copy for a Nickelodeon show or something, I just do it, and then I listen to it a few times, and then I give myself some direction, and then I try to figure out what's going to sound better, and then I redo it, and then I edit it, and I send it off.
Okay.
But when I'm working in the booth with guys on a show, I don't have to think about anything because they're like, oh, okay, we'll do it like this, change this. So they, you know, mold my read into whatever they want. And so I, there's like no pressure because they're going to get what they want by giving me notes. You know what I mean? So it's like so much easier. If I had a director every time I was auditioning, I'd probably get a lot more roles.
So when you are just at your house in your closet, which in starting this podcast, the first intros and outros I would record, I would be in my closet, like huddled over the microphone.
Yeah. Closets are the best place to record.
Yes, for sure. It would take me like an hour to do an intro though. Yeah. So like, if for like a voiceover, you know, my 5 minute intro may have taken me an hour to actually nail down. Like, what's the longest you've spent on like just a voiceover audition? That...
You know, I probably should spend more time, honestly, because, and I think that I've been spoiled because working on Archer, they're like, great, done. They like, they don't, they're not picky. I usually do three reads and that, then we move on. I think that, because that's the most voice work I've ever done, I think that's made me think that like, oh, I can just do three and it's going to be perfect. So I don't spend that much time on stuff. But what usually takes me the longest is if something's like, doesn't come naturally to me, or it's like the words don't work, or it's something like if I have to do like a banking commercial where I'm just basically a female voice, and it, but character stuff is way easier for me. You know what I mean? So if it's like wordy or jargony or stuff like that, then that usually takes me the longest because I stumble over stuff and I, you know, it just is, it's not right for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how, like, if it's a 30 second, will at some point are you like, this isn't for me, I'm not going to get it anyway?
Yeah.
Or will you still try to muscle through it?
It depends. Sometimes I'll just read stuff and be like, this isn't for me. And I'll pass on it. I do that more in voice work than I do in like on camera work because I don't have as much credit doing on camera stuff. So I have to do everything they ask me to do pretty much still. But yeah, there's plenty of times because I'm like, it's wasting my time. It's wasting their time. Somebody else is going to get this job. That's going to be way better for it. So let's have that person do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So for someone trying to get into the voiceover world, is there like a reel you put together? Like, what are the kind of the credentials?
Yeah. So, there's actually lots of services, depending on where you live, that you can go do sometimes like a workshop or a class. And then through that, they take a bunch of your stuff and they'll build a reel for you. And that's usually part of the class payment. You get your reel at the end. So that can be really helpful at the very beginning. And then as you work, you know, you get a job doing a radio spot. Then you get that from them, which can be one of the hardest things to do is after you get to do a job, getting the commercial or getting the thing, it's like everybody's disappeared. Nobody exists anymore that worked on that. Like everybody is now just like a puff of smoke and you can't get it. But so that's really important. And the quicker you do it, the more likely you'll be able to get it. So you get that stuff and then add it to your reel.
Okay.
And you can use, there's lots of people that do that kind of work for fairly cheap, but it's as important as a voiceover actor as headshots for an on-camera actor. Like you have to have it, especially if you're not well known. People don't know what your voice sounds like. So yeah, I think the reels are really important. And then the great thing about voice work is because you can do it anywhere, from anywhere, and you can work anywhere, is you can get an agent anywhere. So I have an agent in Atlanta that gets me local stuff, but then I have an agent in LA too, and it's as easy for me to audition for my LA agent as it is my Atlanta agent. And so if you can't find an agent in your city, maybe you can find a smaller agent in another city. You know what I mean? So that's totally a possibility too.
Yeah, especially with the internet.
Yeah.
You can really create your own success from anywhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But there is a lot of competition. So know that, you know, getting into it. But another great thing that a lot of people in Atlanta do is books on tape. So reading, doing narration for books. And you get so much time. I mean, because you're reading a whole book. So I have quite a couple friends that do it. One friend that does a lot of it, Tiffany Morgan. She's a great actress in Atlanta. And she's like built her a side career just doing that. And she records at her house because she's got a really good studio. And I mean, if you're starting out, imagine the amount of like in studio time you get out of doing just one book. Yeah. So it can be really valuable.
I love that you're still based in Atlanta too.
Yeah.
And I love that all these opportunities and you don't feel the need to move and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way.
Yeah.
But you being in the industry is, especially in the comedy side, are people aware of like the talent that's here in Atlanta?
I think it's changing. I've been really lucky, and I didn't want to leave Atlanta because I love Atlanta and I just don't like Los Angeles. Hmm. I mean, there's great things about it. And so I'll go for like a month a year just to kind of have my connections out there. So it is, you know, it's beautiful. Like it's sunny every day. You can go on hikes. Right. There's swimming pools everywhere. It's great, but it's just not my city, you know? I never left it. I always planned on it. When I was like, okay, I'm an actor now. I'm either going to move to LA or New York. That's what you have to do. And so it was always my plan, but I always kept getting work here. And so it's like, why would you move away from the place where work is happening? And so that can be anywhere. If you're in Chicago or if you're in Toronto or wherever you're at, if you're getting work there, there's no reason to move away. And then luckily, as I was just kind of like holding on and wanting to stay in Atlanta, and it's also a lot cheaper to live here than it is LA or New York, then the industry blew up here. And so now I'm like, well, now I'm like, it'd be like moving away from California during the gold rush. Like, why would I do that? You know? But the big deal, the big difference is, and I'm sure you know this too, is that everything, there's tons of stuff shooting here, but they're still casting out of LA. So if you are going to get an audition for a good show, you probably have to have an agent in another town. So LA or New York.
Right.
But I think it's starting to change. I think they're starting to realize that there is talent here. But there's lots of shows like Walking Dead has been and always was and continues to be really good about hiring local talent. Like lots of, you know, I, Tonya had a lot of local talent in it. There's so many shows that now I think people are starting to be like, oh, okay, like there's a lot of talent here, but hopefully it'll start becoming not just a couple of lines in a movie or a couple of lines on a show, but actually larger roles and recurring roles and, you know. So I think it's changing, but I think it's going to take a little bit of time because I think the infrastructure around the business, the acting side, has got to get bolstered a bit. Like we need more good agents. We need more managers. I think that all that is still a little bit lagging.
But even having people like you in the scene that is having this national recognition on a television show, but then also still creating your own projects and really trying to get those sold, I think that can add credibility to it as well.
Yeah, totally. And to know that there are people here creating shows and making content and putting it out there. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about Atlanta that I always say to people is that like, there's nobody telling us what to do here. Like there isn't Hollywood, there isn't Broadway. There isn't, I mean, even Chicago and Second City and like them being such an improv hub, like we can do whatever we want here and we're so free. Like if I want to start something, I can make it happen in a couple of weeks. You are doing this. Like you can start a podcast. You can start a production company. You can do whatever you want. Like it just feels really possible to do stuff here because there's a lot of people that are willing to work on it with you, you know?
Yeah. Well, we should work together.
Totally.
I mean, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
We didn't even know each other 40 minutes ago, and now we're like...
best friends.
Okay, I was going to say besties, but best friends is a little more susceptible.
Yeah.
Susceptible. Yeah. Sorry. I was using a liberal arts word there. I just want to use my degree for something
besides
toilet paper.
Yeah.
So in landing this plane and everything, like what are you... It seems like you're trying to continue with Archer, but then also I like your self-made hustle as well. It's like, well, we're just making new projects. We're actually pitching something tomorrow, this new travel show. So like, what are you seeing? What are your goals in the future here?
My dream, honestly, is to have my own show doing comedy where I'm the star and I'm also a creative voice. But I, of course, would absolutely take a job that somebody gave me on a show that wasn't mine.
Uh-huh.
But I really want to be doing my own stuff, but with the money and support of a network. You know, I don't want to have to be scrapping it together forever by myself. So that's my dream, is to have my own show on a network doing what I love, you know, and hiring all my friends in Atlanta that are super hilarious and talented that I know are good, that the world needs to see. That's the dream.
Like how clear is this dream in terms of like are you seeing like a sitcom? Are you seeing like the style of like a 30 Rock? Or how clear is the dream?
It's not that clear. I don't know exactly, because I'm like, well, I would love to do like something like a Carol Burnett style variety show or sketch show, or I would totally do a sitcom too, or maybe it's more like a travel show, you know? So I'm not exactly sure. I think I would be willing to do a lot of different things, but I think what would make me the happiest is something like Heart of America, where I get to play a bunch of different characters, you know, and be in a bunch of different crazy costumes. And that would be the most fun to me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can't wait to see that happen.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. And this has been great.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Well, before we get out of here, is there anything else you want the world to know?
When are you going to put this out? Soon?
It'll be a couple weeks.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I release them every single Monday.
Great. So there is a video we're about to release that's like a Halloween video.
Cool.
It'll probably be out today or tomorrow, so definitely out by the time you release this. And it'll be on Dad's Garage TV, which is a YouTube channel, and that's where all of our stuff is, so people can go there and check it out.
Oh, are you almost becoming your own network? Are you looking to...
Well, I don't know. Maybe. We don't know yet. We're still figuring it out.
I didn't mean to let the cat out of the bag there.
It's okay.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. We just don't know. We don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all right, then. We'll go check it out. And how can they follow you and all that as well?
Amber C. Nash on both Instagram and Twitter. And I don't really use Facebook. So, and all the other ones, I don't even understand them. So that's the best place.
Well, all right. Amber Nash, thank you for being on Hot Bread.
Thank you.
All right.
Yes.
Woo. Hot Breath. All righty, Hot Breath-iverse. I will link Dad's Garage TV and all of her other links in the show notes below, as well as links to our online store if you want to get some merch, or as well as links to my online podcasting course if you're interested in starting your own podcast. All that'll be linked in the show notes below. But most importantly, just let's connect. You know, Hot Breath is not only a podcast, it's actually a comedy network and comedy community that we've been cultivating here over the past few years. So if this is your first time listening, please let me know what you liked about it, maybe what you didn't like. Personally, I enjoyed her breakdown of characters and how to develop characters, and also our discussion about stand-up versus improv is always intriguing when we can build a bridge between the two worlds, because we're all just funny people. I feel like the more we can collaborate, the more the world can appreciate comedy. So even if this isn't your first time listening, I just love your feedback in general. All of our social media, at Hot Breath Pod, that's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Hot Breath Podcast is the website. JoelByersComedy.com is my personal website. If you would like to, I don't know, see my schedule of me performing stand-up, or if you would like to see a link to anything else I have going on, or if you just like to book me, that's also a good thing to do. Or Joel Byers Comedy on all social media as well. But really, this is all about the community aspect of kind of building together. So any feedback you have, or any way you could show support, even if sharing is the easiest way to show support, just... I know I'm reaching outside of stand-up more lately, and that's bringing in new audiences. So the more we can connect with new comedians and new comedy fans, that's really what this is all about. So thank you for spending your valuable day or morning or evening with me and the Hot Breath-iverse. Yes, the Hot Breath-iverse as we land this plane here. I do appreciate you and all that you do for us here at the Hot Breath-iverse. Sorry, I was seeing how many times I could say Hot Breath-iverse in this interview. Anyway, let's get out of here. What do you say? I got in a silly mood listening to this one. Amber's such a silly goose. It was so much fun to have her on here. So in the meantime, in between time, peeps, we all the way out here. Keep on that comedy grind. Shout out to my engineer, Amon Garner, for keeping all my audio sounding crystal clear. Of course, I recorded these at Most Uniquest Studios. This was, you could hear in the audio, you'll see in the video, we had a couple things to work out. You know, we're always exploring and trying out new things, so this was something we were trying out this week. That's how we learn. We continue to experiment and push the envelope. So subscribe on iTunes. We're posting new episodes on here every single week. Oh, really, every other day we're posting something new. So subscribing is going to be the best way to keep intact. All of it will be linked in the show notes as well on how you can support, whether it is through the merch shop or just the donate button, whatever it is, however you can support as we hit this holiday stride. It is all greatly appreciated. So you'll definitely want to tune in next week. Our guest, we have a Hot Brethren coming back, Caleb Sinan. Yes, he is all the way back. Hot Breath-isode numero dos. That is number two for all of you that aren't woke. He was number two. I interviewed him right like the week he moved to LA a couple years ago. Since that interview, he has been on Conan twice. He's been a new face at Just for Laughs in Montreal. He's been on Comedy Central. There's so many things Caleb is doing now, and it's very exciting to get to catch up with him and reveal all of the how he was able to do it in such a short amount of time. So I will leave the link in the show notes to his first interview so you can study up before next week's episode. But anyway, that being said, let's get out of here. If you know before, I think my wife at the end of all of these, at the end of all of these, she made our theme song, so now I'm forever indebted to thanking her. I mean, I am so honored to thanking her. So thank you to my wife, Erin Byers, for making the theme song. And thank you to you, hot brethren and sistren, for keeping us moving along. And yes, that did rhyme. So until next Monday, right here on Hot Breath. Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.